Hi, I'm John Weber. Today on Piano Jazz, we are graced by a visit from a world-renowned first call recording session bassist here in New York City. She's been winning composition awards since she was a teenager, which is not too long ago. She is a must-see, show-stopping, steadily employed fixture at Iridium's Monday Night Sets since the last millennium. She's well into her second decade on that gig, anchoring a smokin' rhythm section for many years side-by-side with the man who merely invented the electric guitar, Les Paul. His bassist of choice is our guest today. She's also an exquisite singer who has performed on at least five immensely popular Broadway shows. She's a class act, and I'm proud to say my friend, Nikki Perrott. Welcome to Piano Jazz.
It's wonderful to be here. Thanks for having me.
You know, I need to ask you about the instrument itself. You play the bass so well, so musically. And my question for you is, something or somebody convinced you to pick up this gigantic instrument at age 15, an instrument with no frets, no keys, just four thick-gauged, low-pitched strings. Tell me, what made the upright bass so attractive and irresistible to you at age 15?
Well, I actually started on piano and flute. And then my sister had a band, and she said to me, I don't need a flute player in my band, so if you want to be in my band, play the bass. And there was one at school, funny enough. I picked up one at school and took it home and put some strings on it and started teaching myself, essentially.
Wow. Well, what would you advise for the 15-year-old student who's just been assigned the contrabass chair? Here they are. They can't even put it under their chin. It's such a big instrument. They got to hold it upright and grab at the strings. It's so big. What would you tell them? You've been there at one point.
Scales.
That'll do it, huh?
No, listen to a lot of bass players and steal their licks. And the bass is so physically hard, so you have to actually do scales and bow chromatic scales and things to actually get used to the size in the left hand of how far the notes are apart.
It is such a thankless gig to play the bass because there you are. I mean, tell me if there's any truth in this statement. To be a great bassist, you almost have to, by nature, be an empathetic and unselfish person.
I hope so. And no, you really are the peanut butter in the sandwich, you know what I mean? You've got the rhythm section on either side of you, and you have to try to make that sound good, but also give a nice foundation for the horn player or the singer out front as well.
That's right. I mean, there you are. You're carrying the entire ensemble on your shoulders. You're the spinal cord that's pretty much determining what the groove is, what the tempo is, you know, and yet, once a bassist gets on stage, a few moments after tuning up, what happens? All attention almost immediately is focused elsewhere. And It doesn't seem fair. The dazzling piano player, the screaming trumpet, the sumptuous tenor sax, the vocalist. Here, you're this crucial player. You're determining the pulse, the groove. Everybody follows you. They have to. You're the harmonic root of every single chord that the band is playing. It's a ton of responsibility, not to mention physically demanding. So maybe we should start out with a tune with a fairly prominent bass part, a feature, which even people who don't play an instrument can fully appreciate. A song like Fever.
Sounds good to me.
Can we do it?
Yeah.
Cool.
Never knew how much I love you. Never knew how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a fever that's so hard to bear. You give me fever. Sun lights up the daytime, moon lights up the night. I light up when you call my name, 'cause I know you're gonna treat me right. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever. When you hold me tight, fever in the morning and fever all through the night. Everybody's got the fever.
Now, you never played electric bass. You just went right to double bass.
I started playing electric bass when I moved to New York.
Oh, interesting.
And that was a way of getting into Broadway shows, doubling. I even did like R&B gigs for a while, and so I kind of moved around New York in different scenes by doubling as an electric and acoustic player.
Yeah. And I know you'll probably blush when I talk about this. I'm not going to talk about all your accolades and prizes that you won for songwriting and for all the scholarships you won. But I do know that your sister, Lisa, is a tremendous saxophone player. She plays soprano, alto, tenor, and barry, and I've heard her play contrabass, clarinet with equal skill. Now, talk about four separate disciplines. She
yes.
somehow has the everything, the
she
sound.
She gets a great sound on every instrument that she plays. You're right.
And a phenomenal songwriter, and mm-hmm. I remember when you two recorded something together. Well, you won a songwriting competition, right? And I know you're embarrassed, and you don't want to hear it, but, I mean, I've never won a songwriting competition. I think it's amazing, but you... You wrote and you wrote with Lisa, who also is a fantastic songwriter. And I would imagine you probably learned some American standards. Like, you learned some standards I never learned. For example, there's this one by Milton Drake.
Mm-hmm.
I know his kid brother Irvin, who's lives in New York here.
Right.
But you did this tune twice. I heard it on your MySpace page, and I heard it. You did it with Rossano Sportiello, and also with John DiMartino. What is it with you and all these great Italian piano players? John Colleoni is another one. But you did that tune, I Love the Way You're Breaking My Heart.
Mm-hmm.
What a great title. I got to hear how
yes.
this goes.
Okay, let's do it then.
Let's have a go.
The way you're breaking my heart, it's terribly, terribly, terribly thrilling. I love the way you're breaking my heart, although you're gonna ruin it, it's heaven while you're doing it. I love the way I feel when we kiss. You're terribly, terribly, terribly irresistible.
Well, Nikki, I would be remiss if I didn't mention your Monday night gig for the first part of the 21st century.
Mm-hmm.
You spent a good decade with a man who probably more than any single individual affected our industry. I actually wrote him a fan letter. I'm talking about Les Paul, of course.
Yeah.
Tell me whatever. What should we know about Les Paul, other than the fact that we love him and we miss him?
I learn a lot, and I got to be close friends with him. I'd call him during the week, see how his health was, you know, particularly towards the end. You never knew if he was having a good week or a bad week. And there was almost like two shows going on. There was, of course, the show, and he really knew how to put on a good show. You know, it was almost like a vaudeville show. There were guests. You had to talk on mic. He was the first one that got me to sing. He's like, don't you do anything else but play the bass? So it was really a show. But backstage, there was another show going on. And that was like all these people that came by to say hello. Some famous, some infamous, but just a whole lot of interesting people who were in awe of his achievements. And so it was a pleasure. And it was nice to play for a full room every Monday. And the crowds still keep coming, so it's still going. And we're excited about that.
It must have been a fantastic opportunity just to meet all these luminaries who were going there to be in awe of Les, and then they saw you, which was the biggest bonus in the world, to hear Nikki Perrott playing at the Iridium.
Thanks a lot. But I feel like it was my honor to be there, you know what I mean, around everybody and meet all these great musicians. It was really a fun gig is what it was. It was a really fun residency, you know.
Yeah. Well, were there any tunes, any staples that you did often, any of Les's favorite tunes? I mean, the guy stayed on the radar screen for 70 years, you know, which is almost impossible to believe in our business. But were there any particular tunes that he did a lot that in which he would feature you?
Yes. It changed over the 10 years. When I first started doing the gig, he made How High the Moon a bass solo. You know,
wow.
He just said, just do a long solo. All right, you know. And then that changed later on because then he wanted to shorten the song and so he could fit more in the set. Or things did change throughout the years, you know. There were some wonderful old Brazil was a staple in his set, you know. And then there were some other tunes, and I can't remember the titles of some of these, but there were some tunes I'd never heard of, ever.
How about East of the Sun, West of the Moon?
He played that every Monday.
Really?
In the opening sequence, he'd play one tune after the other, just a chorus, and he always would stick in East of the Sun.
Oh, we have to play it in honor of Les.
Okay, I'd love to. One, two, a one, two, three. Ba-ba-ee, ba-dee-boo-dee-bee, ba-ba-ee, bo-ee-boo-dee-bee, ja-ba-ee, bo-dee-boo-dee-bee, fa-ba-roo-ee-ba-dee. East of the sun and west of the moon, we'll build a dream house of love, dear. Near to the sun in the day, near to the moon at night. We'll live in a lovely way, dear, living on love, pale moonlight. Just you and I, forever and a day. Love will never die, 'cause we'll keep it that way. Up among the stars we'll find a harmony of life to a lovely tune. East of the sun and west of the moon, dear. East of the sun and west of the moon.
To hear the full Piano Jazz broadcast, tune in next week to your NPR station. Log on to pianojazz.npr.org to find a station in your area. Piano Jazz is a production of South Carolina ETV and Radio. Support for Piano Jazz comes from the National Endowment for the Arts, the Friends of Piano Jazz, and NPR.